expecting Lars Larson.
Yeah.
Eat me alive.
Which one is the one we got?
One of the problems of getting old is that
I can't remember anyway.
That's how many things.
My toes. I need a wider shoe than I did 2 years ago.
Call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for April 5th. We're going to have a little bit of chaos in figuring out which is which from now till the 18th of April. We have something like 50 bills in front of us between now and then to deal with. So we may be up and down in some kind of odd order. I'm going to open a public hearing. Are we going 3260? A public hearing on House Bill 3260. And ask Michael Dembro, Jennifer Williamson, and John McConnell to join us. Oh, yes, please. Tell us what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3260 requires the Oregon Health Authority to conduct a study examining at least four options for financing health care in Oregon. It specifies criteria for evaluating those options. It requires a report including recommendation based on the established criteria. It requires authority to solicit gifts, grants, and other funds for the purpose of carrying out the study, and requires a report to the Interim Healthcare Committee ahead of the 2015 regular session of the legislature, and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
And I think this one needs an amendment that we don't have yet that clarifies the language on where the money comes from or something like that. Representative Dembro?
Yes.
Williamson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jennifer Williamson. I am the state representative from House District 36, which is Portland's west side. And I am very pleased to be here today in this hearing for House Bill 3260. As we all know, Oregon is leading the way nationally in transforming the way we deliver health care in our state. We have been willing to design and implement new systems and face challenges head on. House Bill 3260 is a continuation of Oregon's bold leadership in health care. For the past 20 years, both public and private entities have conducted at least 27 economic studies comparing single-payer financing to other healthcare delivery methods in the United States. However, none of these address unique concerns of our state. It's important that a single-payer study be conducted that is specific to Oregon's current as well as future medical needs and healthcare needs. Oregon is already committed to moving forward to create a healthcare system that is affordable and accessible. The results of this study can only help Oregon continue to make intelligent healthcare decisions. And for those reasons, I urge your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Michael Dembro, I represent House District 45, that's Northeast Portland, out to Park Rose. It's a pleasure to be here. I say that with a bit of nostalgia. You know, I started my legislative career as part of the Health Care Committee.
We miss you.
Yes, before descending into the black hole.
Well, I wouldn't trade any of that.
thank you, Mr. Chair.
I had to
descend that.
Into the black hole of education policy and funding. But someday, maybe I'll crawl out and be able to be part of this committee again. Back in 2009, it was, you know, as those of you, there were a few of you who were on the committee at that time will remember, it was a very exciting time. I have completely forgotten all the hours that we spent on scope of practice debates, but I retain really fond memories of all the work that we did on House Bill 2009, which was our initial healthcare transformation conversation. We talked about a bunch of things and sent out work to be done. One of the things that we talked about was creating a public option for Oregon. And right at the same time that we were having our debates, debates were happening at the national level, which led to the Affordable Care Act. Unfortunately, as part of the conversation around the Affordable Care Act, whose goal is universal health coverage, which, you know, I think we all believe in that goal. Many of us believe that health care is a human right. Access to quality health care is a human right. And the question becomes how best to get there. Some of us believe in a single payer kind of model. Others are proponents of a public option that would be something that would be part of a larger range of options sold on the exchange. Others are supportive of, you know, the Affordable Care Act as it currently stands. Others have other proposals. What many of us feel that we need to do at this time is do a very serious, high-level study of what is the best funding option for Oregon, and that would look at a range of different options. And now is the time to do that. For those of us who believe that single payer is going to be the best way to get to the goal of universal health care coverage in the most affordable and accessible manner, we can't get that until at least 2017, because the Affordable Care Act included a preemption against states receiving waivers to be able to get there, to be able to include the Medicare population, the veterans population, the other populations that it would require to have a truly universal system. But in any case, in coming up with what would be the best plan for Oregon, we need to do more than just, you know, back of the napkin kinds of calculations. We need a really serious study. And that's what this bill, House Bill 3260, is proposing. It's proposing that the Oregon Health Authority, with funding coming from outside sources, would oversee a high-level study that would study at least four different options. And the bill lays them out in section 2, probably. No, it's all in section 1. It would look at, first of all, a single-payer option. It would look at a public option competing with private plans. It would look at the status quo, the Affordable Care Act, with the Cover Oregon exchange that is going to be coming into effect next year. And a fourth option, which you don't have on the bill, it will be part of an amendment that has been drafted, would have the people doing the study look at a proposal that some of you might remember came to the legislature in 2011. John DiLorenzo was the sponsor of it. It was in Senate Bill 972, which would separate health care coverage from employment and would fund universal health care through a dedicated sales tax. So this study would look at that as well. And you know, anything else that the people doing this study felt was the best option for Oregon. So that, in a nutshell, is what House Bill 3260 is about. The funding for this would come through a combination of philanthropy and foundation money. We would expect an interim report to the legislature in 2014, and the final report coming to the legislature in 2015. You will hear behind me some testimony from a number of experts about this, and in addition, in OLIS or on the dais, you'll find statements of support from a number of individuals. State Senator Ginny Burdick, Representative Jules Bailey, Liz Baxter, representing the We Can Do Better organization, the Main Street Alliance, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, Oregon Nurses Association, Citizens for Peace and Justice, the Oregon Medical Association, nine small businesses from LeGrand, the Oregon Public Health Association, Bruce Goldberg, the director of the Oregon Health Authority, Elders in Action, the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens, Chun-Wei Chi, OHSU, Jeff Kogan. There's a lot of support for this concept and for us undertaking this at this time. So that, in a nutshell, is what this bill is about and why I would urge you to vote for it and why it is receiving the support that it is so far. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Dr. McConnell, will you join us as well?
Okay, sure. Why don't you come up, Dr. McConnell?
I saw your name on the list. It was a put in and somebody else's behalf.
Well, I think I'm here on behalf of OHSU in support of this bill.
And would you be taking some part in the bill if it is a study? Your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is John McConnell, and I'm from OHSU. And this question, would I be taking part in the study? I don't know. Actually, I don't know much about if there is already a designated party who's going to be doing the study or where the funding is coming. I'm here to speak mostly to the benefits of what a study could provide or what sort of things a study should consider.
Thank you. Want to do that?
Sure. I think let me list a couple of things that should be considered in a study. So I think, first of all, the study should evaluate the extent to which new financing schemes can reduce uninsurance. So we know that with changes in health reform that are happening both in Oregon and nationally, that uninsurance should decline, but it is not going to go to zero. Second, it's probably worth considering if changes in financing can reduce administrative overhead and some of the waste and complexity associated with the current system. There's controversy as to what percent of our spending goes to administrative costs, but I think general consensus is that other systems might reduce the administrative overhead. A third issue is the extent that new financing systems could reduce the prices paid for medical care. And so we know that healthcare in the U.S. is more expensive than other countries, but the evidence suggests that one of the reasons that it is more expensive is not necessarily that we use more, but that the price per unit costs more. So if we look at other countries that are sort of similar to ours, they use a similar number of scans per person, they have a similar number of hospital beds and things like that. But, and you might have seen this in the Time magazine cover story, the price per unit in the U.S. is much higher. And in contrast to a lot of other industries, what we haven't seen in healthcare on a consistent basis is the ability for competition to really bring prices down. And competition in certain cases has worked, and in certain cases it's led to what economists think has actually driven prices up through sort of a medical arms race where providers try to have the newest thing. But there are ways of structuring delivery systems or competition to try to sort of push prices down. I think we also want to consider the extent to which new financing systems would have beneficial impacts on a delivery system. So I think probably a system that maybe wouldn't be quite so favorable would be one that would take something like what we have in Medicare and replicate that for all, sort of a Medicare for all without changing the fee-for-service system. And so I think there's general consensus that the fee-for-service system doesn't work very well, and you wouldn't want to just sort of take that and not think about some of the changes that are necessary in the delivery system. And then I think finally, what the study really needs to understand is some of the complex regulatory and economic consequences that would be likely to happen with big changes in the financing. And so a lot of people get their care through their employer, and so if that changed, sort of understanding how the tax flows would change, it probably would require some exemptions from Medicare, Medicaid, some of the Affordable Care Act type of provisions would require some exemptions there. And so there are a lot of complex things that probably would help if the study could elucidate exactly what those would look like and what the implications would be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any questions to this panel?
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one thing that I didn't mention, that the first set of amendments that you have points to is the study will also be looking at the cost savings to local governments and school districts and as well as state government of different financing options. That is, do these have the potential to bring down the cost of government by bringing down the cost of health benefits?
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll close the public
witness.
No, there are I think there are a couple more, but...
I don't have any other witnesses.
Yeah, we do.
We do?
All right, Mr. Mullins, you want to...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You should have had, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, on your sign-up list, you should have had Chinwei Chi, Dr. Chi.
Yes.
Okay.
I found them.
Thanks a lot.
Dr. Chi and Mr. Mullins, will you join us, please?
You check on here and see if anybody has a problem with sending this building.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen from the Oregon Law Center, here to support House Bill 3260. I have a very short bit of testimony that I'd like to give about the basic health program option, and I've testified before the House Health Interim Committee about that provision under the Affordable Care Act that will bring affordability to our program here in the state should we adopt the basic health program option. So simply what I'm going to be asking for, and I've talked to Representative Dembro about this, is amending the bill to include and specifically calling out the basic health program option as one of the things to be reviewed. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair.
And did Representative Dembro have a problem with that?
He didn't, and he doesn't.
Okay, save the question.
Okay.
So we will await a memo, I mean an amendment coming on this bill.
Great.
And it has a subsequent to Ways and Means. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman and member of the committee, I'm Junhui Ji. I'm a professor at OSU. And I'm part of the team with Professor William Shell from Harvard that helped Taiwan build its first national health insurance. And I'm here to support the House Bill 3260. As we all know, our healthcare system is one of the most expensive, inefficient, inequitable, and unsustainable. And as a health policy professor at Oregon State, I urge the House Committee on Healthcare to consider and advance the House Bill 3260. While the ACA attempts to mitigate some of those problems we discussed, it is widely acknowledged to provide only a patchwork. And that will not resolve all those problems. It will simply leave the fundamental problem intact. These problems are complex, yet critical to the well-being of our state and nation. National health expenditure consume 18% of our GDP and are only projected to rise. And this financial pressure exists alongside innumerable testimonies of individuals and families whose lives have been negatively impacted by our system that has failed to provide the opportunity for an affordable care. So the myriad burdens within our current system that will remain even after full implementation of the ACA warrant a commitment to thoroughly exploring potential solutions. House Bill 3260 represents the type of tangible research that is needed to allow policymakers to weigh various approaches to these pressing challenges. And this information gathering will critically illuminate strengths and weaknesses across the spectrum of various courses options, thereby enabling legislators to fulfill their mandate of governing in the best interest of our constituents. The proposed study will enable Oregon's ability to assertively address the remaining problem of the current system. Without reliable and rigorous research, these decisions can only be based on speculation or ideology coupled with endless debate. I think it is vital that we conduct research so that we can ground our policy decision on sound data. And this is a matter that merits indeed demands active investigation. Without invoking a foundation of reliable research, the resulting inaction will simply continue to become the default support of the current status quo system. On the other hand, the established cost projections are capable of incentivizing action. As a health policy professor, I have to believe that the government is a conduit through which we can engage in deliberative action to improve our society. Moreover, that this process is characterized by a pursuit of reliable information and community input that can enable dialogue and build a rational foundation of assessment. House Bill 3260 directly speaks to the health of our communities and of our fiscal stability, valid concern respectively, and especially urgent collectively. Oregon is a model of innovation in health policy, which we have been proud of, and for creating opportunities for an exceptionally high quality of life for its residents, including healthy communities. The support for House Bill 3260 is entirely in keeping with our commitment to well-being and innovation at the state level to engage evidence-based approaches to address the healthcare crisis we collectively face. I believe it is also the first step towards promoting a health system that can improve Oregonians' health in an efficient, equitable, and sustainable way, and also a system that reflects the fine character of Oregonians.
Thank you very much, Professor. You close the public hearing on House Bill 3260, and we'll wait for an amendment. We'll carry 3260 over for a work session on Monday. If you're not ready on Monday, we'll carry it over to Wednesday.
Thank you.
Okay, we have some business to do. Let's start. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2090. House Bill 2090, you remember, was a bill that maintained the preferred drug list, eliminated the sunset on the preferred drug list for physical drugs and made some changes to the preferred drug list on mental health drugs. It turns out through a lot of discussions, we're not going to be able to deal with the mental health drugs at this point. And we have an amendment before you, which is the Dash 2 amendment that looks complicated, but only does eliminate the sunset on the physical drugs. So it's a lot of words, but we've been assured it does nothing but delete that 2014 sunset on physical drugs.
It's the Dash 14 amendment.
These are the Dash 14s.
Dash 14.
Excuse me. And you have them.
You're scaring me there, yeah. Mr. Chair. I was trying to find. Okay, I got
but
Dash 14.
I was 12 behind. It's okay.
That's close.
I got to sign.
We have 2014s. What we're asking today is that we adopt the amendment that deletes all the mental health stuff, and then send the bill to Ways and Means. It needs to go to Ways and Means because if we don't maintain the physical drug, it's got a $7 million fisco. If we don't add the mental health drugs, it's got a $9.3 million fiscal, because these things have been included in the governor's budget. So this is just too complicated for mere mortals on policy committees to figure out. So what I would ask of you, we're going to motion, we'll ask that you adopt the Dash 2s, and then we send...
Dash 14.
On Dash 14s. It's a different bill. The Dash 14s, and send it to Ways and Means. So can I have a motion on this? Make sure you say the right number. I seem to be having trouble with.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 14 amendments to House Bill 2090, dated 4/4/13.
Representative Thompson moves that we adopt the Dash 14 amendments to House Bill 2090, dated 4/4/13, and refer the bill to... No, just that.
Just that.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I'm glad that we have this carve-out, because I was a little concerned when the first bill first came before us, because messing with the psychotropic drugs that we're talking about here can be very dangerous. So, and I'm glad that we're making this change. So
that we came to our senses.
We came to our senses and probably started on some Cymbalta to get ourselves there.
All right, Representative. Are there any other comments on the Dash 2s? Dash 14s.
You're taking too much Cymbalta, sir.
Are there any objections to the Dash 14s? They're a part of the House Bill 2090. We have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2090 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Not by prior reference. Representative Thompson moves that we
check on that.
That we move House Bill 2090 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and refer it to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Will you call the roll, please?
Representative Clem?
Excused.
Representative Conker?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Yes.
Representative Kenimer?
Yes.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kinney-Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
And Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion passes, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. We have another bill that we discussed before and has come up with a significant other funds fiscal. So I'm going to propose we do the same thing to House Bill 2432 that we... is Representative... Well, it's a work session, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, I don't think we need... do that. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to the Dash 2 amendments to 2432 dated 3/15/13.
Representative Kinney-Geyer moves we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2432 dated 3/15/13. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Dash 2s are adopted. Do I have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2432 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended.
Sorry.
Representative Kinney-Geyer moves House Bill 2432 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Yep.
I think I'm a little bit concerned about the dynamic between some of the things that we're working on that are obviously well intentioned and probably have some benefits that come with them, and my understanding of the importance of attaching individual responsibility and incentives and behavior to healthy outcomes or health care, health outcomes. So I want to make sure that I understand the scope of what this would do. It's a blanket prohibition on any cost sharing, meaning co-payments, deductibles, anything of that nature, for the period of time specified and during pregnancy and 6 weeks postpartum that are related to diabetes, managing diabetes in the mother. I just want to make sure I understand that correctly.
Well, the intention is not quite to do that. And that's why it's going to Ways and Means to sort that out. The intention, as I understand it from the sponsor, is to deal with diabetic supplies particularly. The bill in its current form says medical services and supplies, and that's creating the confusion that ended up with a $1.6 million fiscal. So it's clear it's not going to go forward on that basis, and getting it to Ways and Means allows them to sort it out in a way that the fiscal office can create a fiscal, and if the language is clear enough so that the fiscal can be much less than that, which I think it's intended to be. So. And that's the proper place to do it because they have a closer relationship with the...
With the cost.
Well, with the fiscal office, and they can make sure the language is such that it reflects what it's supposed to.
Well, I know that my vote is not going to hold this bill up, but I would have certainly preferred to pass what, in this case, is going to be a final bill because I think it's policy-related, not just cost-related.
mean, there is a cost, obviously. I'm not minimizing that, nor am I suggesting that it's not okay to work on cost reductions and raising means. I understand the point. However, there's also a policy element to it. And although I understand, Mr. Chair, from your description that the intention of the sponsor is to make it apply to supplies, there were also discussions about how that affects behavior, and I don't think we've resolved that either. There's expensive supplies, there's cheap supplies, and part of this, and I'm not sure that was resolved by the dash two. So I'm asking those questions and pointing out those points by way of saying that I'll be voting no on this.
I must say I agree with you, but it comes to a different vote conclusion because with the 40 or so bills we have left to do, I think that's a better place to deal with. What amounts to really a fiscal issue, although I think there are policy. This is where policy should be decided. Well, I think we have another suggestion that we ought to hold over and try and get the language clarified so that we'll still probably need to send it down, but it might be. What's the committee's desire?
Mr. Chair, I would actually be good with that because, I mean, one of the things we're trying to do is work on personal responsibility, and a lot of the testimony and things we're dealing with are type 2 diabetics here because type 1s are usually covered because it's a necessary thing where they test day in and day out. And with the implementation of the CCOs and what they're trying to do, it would kind of be nice to see what they're after and direction they're going because there's a lot of open ends here, and we've got a lot of stuff going with CCOs, and I would feel more comfortable having them address this issue than us at this point.
Can I say something? So my impression, Mr. Chair, is that the LFO may have gotten a different impression from, you know, in the language that was presented from Representative Gelser, who introduced this. And thus it came back with a very similar fiscal in the dash two. It didn't quite clarify it. And I think if we gave some more time for Representative Gelser to sit with fiscal and really clarify what was meant, that might clear up some of this. And I think part of what we're trying to deal with now is we have so many bills, let's pass it on to them for the fiscal. And on the other hand, we want to pass things on to them that are as mature as possible. And if there is something we can do to clarify language, it's closer to the intent. I think that would be a good service to Ways and Means.
Okay. Let's do that. We have the amendment. The amendment's in. Is that right? Dash two, yes.
The amendment's in, and the fiscal came back is very similar to the first time around. And
higher,
so
I think.
I think it means a conversation that might result in another amendment and another fiscal.
Okay.
Do we want to rescind the...
We need the dash two, but we may need a dash three as well.
I think I'd like to see us get our policy a little clearer.
It's a deal.
I think it's appropriate.
Close the work session on House Bill 2432. We have time to reschedule it for a week from today?
Can you do that?
Okay. We won't carry it over. We'll reschedule it for a week from today.
Okay.
That will give Representative Gelser time to work it out. I think it's a simple wording. I think if that services is taken out and supplies are left in, which I think is, then I think it will change the whole story. But that's good. Close the work session on House Bill 2432. We have, again, what I think is a brief bill. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2128, and it's my understanding that the representatives of OEB are okay with this in its current form, and that the representatives of the exchange are neutral on it now. Can I just get some nods from back there and see if that's the case? Mr. Black?
I'll go ahead and ask Dave.
Come up. David's over here. Okay. Okay, let's go. Can I have a motion on House Bill 2128?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-28-13 to House Bill 2128.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-28-13 to House Bill 2128. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
We didn't wait for you to tell us what the bill is about, as usual. Why don't you tell us what this bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2128 requires the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation, Cover Oregon, and the Oregon Educators Benefit Board to reach agreement on plans offered through the exchange to educators. It requires that same rate apply to plans offered by board outside of the exchange as identical plan offered through the exchange.
Kenmer, did you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm having difficulty recalling a conversation of all things I had this morning about this.
There was some concern that this reversed a bill that we passed, I think, in January. But I've been assured that it doesn't. The question is, if a school board is now not in OEB and
yes,
wants to go into the exchange,
thank you.
Do they have to go in through OEB to the exchange? And the answer I've been assured, and we'll put on the record, is that no, they do not.
Okay.
This bill only relates to how a plan gets proposed, and it's making sure the plans in the exchange for education are negotiated with OEB as a part of that. So I have assurance on that.
Thank you.
That question was raised.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I like this bill, but I have concerns with it because once OEB gets involved, because my districts would love to opt out of OEB because of what it's costing them, and I'm worried that there might be some collusion between the two to try and get a price set to where it's equal so they don't drop out of OEB. And I'd rather just allow the districts to be able to, because we allowed them to opt out of OEB into the exchange, they should just be able to go there and pick a plan for their employees without having to communicate with OEB.
Well, it turns out they're going to be in a different risk pool than the rest of the exchange, so they really do need to work out a way to deal with it on a separate basis. But
yeah, I want to make sure our districts are allowed to maximize their dollars, because right now they're paying a lot for their health insurance and schools are hurting badly and trying to save as much money as they can on employees. And we've heard the numbers of the districts that are out of OEB, how much they're saving. So, and it's millions of dollars in these larger districts. And in one of my small districts, it's $100,000 that they could save, which is two teachers they can put back in the classroom if they could opt out of OEB.
Is there another bill that also deals with school districts' ability to opt into OEB or the health insurance exchange or stay in the policy that they currently have? Is that a different bill than this?
We passed that bill in January.
Yeah.
This is a bill that simply clarifies the relationship between OEB and the exchange and developing the options that are available.
Only concern is OEB getting involved with the exchange. I worry that they're going to mess that up to where we're paying too much for insurance there, too.
Okay. Are there any other comments?
Mr. Chairman,
we have a motion.
Are we on amendments or are we on the bill? I'm sorry.
I think we're still on the amendments on the dash ones.
I jumped ahead to the bill. Sorry.
Are there any objections to the dash ones? Dash one's amendments are part of House Bill 2128. Can we have a motion on the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt House Bill 2128 as amended and move it to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kenny Geyer moves that we adopt House Bill 2128 as amended and move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
My understanding of the difference between what we passed and what we're doing now is that would be affected by this bill is that OEB and the exchange would agree on what is in the plan not on the price of the plan.
That's right.
And it's also my understanding, and I may be wrong about this because they're all risk pooled, and that may be why it makes sense to have OEB agreeing with the exchange. But certainly with a small group, so if you were, if a school district had 500 employees, it would be like a, well, that's too big, actually. I'm now correcting myself. With a small group, an employer would come to the exchange, and the exchange would work with the employer to design its plan, right?
The plan inside the exchange and the same plan outside the exchange and the exchange rules has to be
must
the same
be price. The same, right.
And this is essentially doing the same thing.
Between OEB and the exchange.
Yeah.
I think that
it's the insurance companies that define the price, not the...
Right. It's the insurance companies that define the price and on both sides, for OEB and the exchange.
Right.
So I think that strikes me as being fine. The only part, in the language of the bill, the part that deletes that the exchange... the language that's being deleted says that the exchange will work with school superintendents and school districts and others to design the plan is replaced with OEB. And I think I'm okay with that. I'm just wondering if anybody knows why it wasn't both. You know, maybe it was the exchange agrees with OEB on the construct of the plan but works with the schools to make sure their needs are addressed, or is it the expectation that OEB is capable of representing those interests?
Can we get Cover Oregon up to clarify that, maybe?
David?
If they have anything they'd like to contribute to further confuse us?
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm Dave Barenberg representing Cover Oregon. So the question was how the design happens and why the parties aren't included in the bill in the process as they were in the current law.
Designing, correct.
I can't speak to that. I mean, the bill, we were not part of the design of the bill or the intent of the bill. We're just have taken a neutral position because we think the policy regarding OEB in the school districts is one that is a policy decision for the legislature. I think that my colleague here to the left might better speak to the intent.
Rep. Conger, Chair Greenlake, for the record, Justin Black from the Oregon Education Association. The reason is the current OEB board is comprised of two representatives, school board representatives, two school administrator representatives, school employees, and two healthcare experts. And so the board is already made up of the same people the statute already spoke of. So it just kind of felt duplicative to include the OEB board and those people. So, you know, this way school districts have a vehicle for saying what the plan should look like. Employees also get a say of what the plans look like through their representatives on the OEB board.
That was exactly the question that I was asking, and I thought maybe the OEB board effectively represented those parties, and that was, but I wanted to make sure.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you.
We have five more bills.
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry. I just
this is the easy one.
But not all schools participate in OEB, right?
Right. Right.
Okay, that's the piece that I'm sorry. Right. I just needed that.
Okay, are we ready for vote? Please call the roll.
Representative Clem?
Excuse.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Kinnemer?
Aye.
Representative Wiley?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Penny-Geyer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenland?
Aye. Motion passes. who's the sponsor of this? This is a committee bill, isn't it?
Committee bill.
Somebody like to carry it?
I guess I could carry it, and then if I find out it's going to mess up the school district, I can share that with everybody.
I'll carry it. I'll close the public hearing, the work session on House Bill 2128. I'm going to carry over House Bill 2076 to Monday, and I'll try and talk to some of you individually about that before Monday. That 2076. There are three bills left. We have about an hour, so I'm going to need to make sure we have discipline in two of them at least are, I think there are several people who want to talk about them. I'm going to ask the proponents and the opponents of the bill to nominate three people each for an opening panel for or against, and we'll try and leave some room for other people to testify. So I think what do we got?
Opponents, measure opponents.
Okay.
This one's just got four people.
Just got four people. Let's start with that.
Introduce.
Yeah, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2348. You want to describe that bill to us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2348 with the -1 amendment established the Task Force on the Future of Public Health Services to study reutilization and consolidation of public health services and make recommendations for legislation. It requires Oregon Health Authority to provide staff support for the task force and requires all state agencies to assist the task force in the performance of its duties. It sunsets the task force on the date of convening the 2016 regular session of the Legislative Assembly and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
We have an amendment on that as well?
The -1 amendment.
What does the -1 amendment do?
That's it. You don't want to hear about the old bill.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to hear about the original bill.
Right.
But that stuff, right?
Let's close the public hearing on this one, and we'll get back to it if we have time. If not, we'll carry it over as well.
Okay.
But I am worried about both the other bills. I am worried about the number of people. But let me start with. Let's open up the public hearing on House Bill 3407, and will you introduce that, and will you pick? We have six people?
Yeah.
Okay. If we work quickly, we can get through that. No opposition?
No.
Really?
If there's no one opposed, Mr. Chair, can they have two panels on that 3407?
Start talking.
Okay.
We have so much
colleagues, thank you. I'm here to introduce House Bill 3407, which is the Traditional Health Worker Commission. Traditional health workers include community health workers, peer wellness specialists, personal health navigators, and doulas. They assist Oregon in achieving the triple aim of improved health care, improved population health, and cost savings through outreach and mobilization, community and cultural listening, case management, care coordination, and system navigation, and health promotion and coaching. House Bill 3650, passed during 2011 legislative session, mandates that members enrolled in Oregon's coordinated care organizations have access to traditional health workers to facilitate culturally and linguistically appropriate care. This bill, House Bill 3407, will establish the Traditional Health Workers Commission as the rulemaking body within the Oregon Health Authority. This commission has been meeting informally, so it's giving it rulemaking powers and formalizing it and adding some members to the commission. It ensures the participation of traditional health workers to create and inform policy regarding their own professions. It's budget neutral, as the commission will fall within the existing resources of the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs out of something that Representative Joe Gallegos submitted to you all, because he could not be here. He's back in his home district right now. Traditional healthcare workers are uniquely placed to work with community members to identify and resolve their own most pressing health issues. They do this by addressing the social determinants of health, which then contributes to reducing and eliminating health inequities. House Bill 3407 gives rulemaking authority to the traditional health workers commission within the Oregon Health Authority. It also formalizes the existing non-traditional health worker committee and converts it to the traditional health workers commission. By providing rulemaking authority, we can ensure the participation of traditional health workers to create and inform policy regarding their own profession and the community they work in. This bill provides a critical tool in our continuing effort to reduce health care costs. Traditional health worker, or promotoras, as they are known in the Latino communities, have for years provided a critical support to the health care system. However, with our client patient in mind, this bill will provide quality control over this enterprise. As stewards of the health and safety of our citizens, passing this bill is good and responsible leadership. I want to thank, in particular, the Oregon Latino Health Coalition. On the back of this, which hopefully you've got a copy of, there are enormous number of groups who have been a part of this, very supportive. If you look in your, I think some of them wanted to have a chance to come up and may not have that chance, but if you look in your OLA system, you'll see a lot of letters of support for this. Sure. Thank you.
If they're brief, we'll give them 2 minutes okay. each.
Great.
And we'll take all six and in order, in any order. There are six signed up. It's three of you each, 2 minutes each. Let's go.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny-Geyer, Vice Chair Thompson, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Lizzie Fussell. I work for the Oregon Latino Health Coalition as the coordinator of the Oregon Community Health Worker Association, which is the professional association for community health workers in Oregon. We are a membership organization led and directed by community health workers. Community health workers and other traditional health workers, peer wellness specialists, personal health navigators, and doulas play a vital role in facilitating healthcare access in rural and other underserved communities while addressing healthcare disparities and improving health outcomes. The Office of Equity and Inclusion at the OHA has done a tremendous amount of work to further develop and bring recognition to this workforce. HB 3407 builds upon this work, formalizing the existing non-traditional health worker committee and converting it to the Traditional Health Workers Commission. This commission will work in collaboration with the OHA to serve as a rulemaking body to ensure appropriate training and standards are in place to prepare both workers and health systems for successful healthcare transformation. While this is primarily a housekeeping bill, it does make one substantive change in that it prescribes increased participation from the workers themselves, aligning with the principle that traditional health workers should help inform and shape policy regarding their own profession. It also ensures the participation of important stakeholders such as employers, trainers, CCOs, providers, and consumers. Traditional health workers are crucial to the success of healthcare transformation and are a proven strategy for improving patient care, improving community health, and helping to bend the cost curve, all elements in the triple aim. We hope you join us in supporting this important bill and vital workforce, and I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny-Geyer, Vice Chair Thompson, and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Gil Munoz. I'm the CEO of Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center, and I'll give you a little example of how community health workers work within the community. Virginia Garcia is a community health center that for the last 38 years has been serving the communities of Washington and Yamhill counties. We provide comprehensive primary care services to over 36,000 patients, half of whom are members of the Oregon Health Plan, about 40% are uninsured. And we serve both a rural and a urban-suburban area. Outreach services are at the core of the community health center model. And since the very beginning of the community health center program that dates back to the 1960s, Virginia Garcia has followed closely in that tradition and has embedded community health workers in the model as a core component to our approach to care. In our experience, community health workers often make the difference in ensuring that health services are most effective. The best diagnosis and treatment in the world is ineffective if it fails to recognize the important cultural and socioeconomic factors confronting the patient, such as language barriers, education, transportation, housing, and economic resources. The community health worker is an important support to the medical care delivered in the exam room. One example of this is a patient who was being seen by an internal medicine doctor for diabetes. The patient was not taking the prescribed insulin, and the doctor was not having success in controlling the diabetes. Senora Isabel, a health promotora, who's bilingual and bicultural, understood that the patient was struggling because of a cultural belief that the taking of insulin could lead to blindness. She helped the patient understand that this was not the case and that she could trust the doctor's advice. The patient began with taking the insulin, and the doctor was amazed to see the sudden improvement in diabetes control. Community health workers also address an important workforce issue confronting our state. The patient-centered primary care home emphasizes a team-based approach to care. At Virginia Garcia, the nucleus is that providers, nurses, medical assistants, and supported by behaviors, clinical pharmacists, and community health workers.
Yeah, will you wrap up, please?
Okay. Virginia Garcia employs 12 community health workers that provide outreach to our patients in a variety of ways, and we see this as an important part in the overall emergence of the CCOs in payment reform, and particularly with the projected increase in Medicaid enrollment and the exchange. Community health workers present an effective way of dealing with eligibility and enrollment issues. So I urge your support for House Bill 3407. Thank you.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chairs Kenny Geyer and Thompson, and members of the committee. My name is John Hummel. I'm the State and Federal Policy Director for the Oregon Primary Care Association. OPCA is a nonprofit membership organization comprising Oregon's 31 community health centers. Our health centers operate 201 health clinics throughout the state that provide care on an annual basis to 330,000 patients. Our patients are primarily uninsured and on Medicaid. Virginia Garcia is one of our member health centers. The best way to promote the triple aim of lower costs, better health care, and better health outcomes is to provide the same high level of health care and human services to all Oregonians. However, in spite of good intentions and dedicated efforts, too many Oregonians are being left behind. Traditional health workers are a valued and essential component of Oregon's health care transformation. OPCA believes these complementary workers are crucial for the success of healthcare transformation and will help us achieve our goal of realizing true triple aim success. OPCA supports the principle that traditional health workers should inform and shape policy regarding their own profession. We believe that a diverse workforce is essential to ensuring a healthy Oregon for all. Please vote yes on House Bill 3407 and support efforts to achieve meaningful participation from traditional health workers in creating policy for their own profession. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Parker and Mike Wenrick?
No.
We have an amendment coming for this bill, so when we're done with this, we'll carry it over till Monday and try and get to it on Monday.
Okay. Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Thompson and Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Judy Parker. I'm a commissioner on the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs. The commission supports this bill and urges its passage. We have submitted written testimony. The commission is here because we support the concept of better health care for individuals, which will, of course, support better health care for the state. And I just want to have a quick anecdote. When my grandmother, mi abuelita in Colorado, was telling me about her favorite doctor, she said that the best doctor was the one who understood her the best. And I said, well, you know, I'm always there, and our cousins are there. We can translate for you. And she said, that's not what I mean. I mean people that truly understand me. And so we support this bill. Any questions? Thank you.
Jordan Sweet. It's a great story.
And brief. Yeah. Nicely done. Nicely
that
done, Mr. Chair.
That too. Okay, we will close this public hearing. We'll work session, maybe Monday, but if not, we'll carry it over again on Wednesday. We're going to end up with 42 bills on the last day that we can pass them. We'll see what we can do.
So we may have a sick out that day.
Bring your sleeping bag. I'll close the public hearing on, all right, we're on House Bill 3407. I am going to reopen the bill on House Bill 2348 and open a public hearing on that bill and explain where we are with it. We also have four people signed up, and two of them have come from more than 100 miles away, so I want to make sure, I want us all to be brief on this. The original intent of this bill was to create 8 regional public health centers, move public health out of the counties into a set of regional public health authorities. The bill in its original form suggested we make that policy and let OHA decide how to create the 8. The Association of Counties came to me and had an alternative suggestion, suggesting a study group to look at how public health ought to be organized in the future. It turned out OHA was very intrigued with that possibility and believed they had money from CDC or could get additional money from CDC to do this. And the amendment that we have before us, I think the dash ones, is that right? The dash one amendments create this task force to do two things, to study the possibility of regionalization, but to look at the question of the future of public health in its broader context. It's one that has strong support from OHA and the counties, who we may hear from, are feeling at least a lot more comfortable with this bill. So let me call, I think we have four people. I'll ask you also to be very brief. Tammy Bainey, Courtney Thompson, Morgan Lowley, and then follow that, we'll have Linda Madrell. Oh, we haven't talked to you this session yet.
No. Well, not to you anyway. I've talked to somebody else, though.
You're welcome.
Probably Representative. He's my representative.
A constituent's always the best. Okay, who we got?
Okay, I'll start. Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, Courtney Thompson, Legislative Director for the Oregon Health Authority. I'll be really brief. We've been working with the Representative Greenlick on the Dash 1 Amendment, and we're supportive of it. We think this is really consistent with the efforts that we're making on healthcare reform and health systems transformation, and think this is the time to examine our public health system as a whole and think of ways to become more efficient in public health. And so with that, we're ready and willing to work on it, and we'll take any questions if you have them, but that's all. Thank you.
My name is Linda Madrell. I'm a county commissioner in Benton County and chair of the Association of Counties Steering Committee on Human Services. Chair Greenlick, call out Representative Thompson, who's my representative. He has a small part of Benton County, but we have appreciated his service very much. The Association of Oregon Counties supports the creation of a task force to develop a vision for the future of public health in Oregon. Local public health has been closely involved with both the transformation and the delivery of health care for a century, and lately on the Oregon transformation of health care and the Early Learning Initiative. Certainly, counties have been working closely with the CCOs to ensure that public health is an important aspect of the organization. Local public health emphasizes that we move our focus to the upstream, and actually public health has always been an upstream focus, to work on preventive measures that can improve the community health and also move the cost curve of medical expenses. It's a long-term endeavor. It's not an overnight thing, but it certainly is the only reliable way to really move that cost curve. In Benton County, data from focused risk group assessments have significantly informed public health's community assessment and improvement plan for health. The CCO did have a couple of representatives were involved in that, but we really did tap onto a lot of the nonprofits that are delivering services for this high-risk group. That data provides a realistic picture of health status, concerns, and priorities for the CCO population and for the community at large to help guide the CCO efforts as well as the county efforts. In addition, the health impact assessments performed by public health provide an informational tool to help decision makers consider health implications of the policies and decisions that may not have otherwise been considered. In fact, Benton County is thinking of developing a resolution and a policy that observes health in all of our policies as well as health in all places. Public health is ground zero for work around building healthy communities and to support the goals of the Early Learning Program that ensures that every child in Oregon is ready to learn by kindergarten. We have nurse home visiting programs and the public health run WIC program, the Women and Infants and Children program for food, which will coordinate with the local early learning hubs to play a role in children's health and to make sure certain that health factors that present minimal barriers to nurturing the abilities of children to grow to through their childhood to adulthood. Once again, we support your idea. Just would like for it to take a little longer.
It would probably take longer anyway. Yes.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, and my favorite representative Conger. My name is Tammy Bainey. I'm a Deschutes County Commissioner, and I'm also the chair of our...
We're all nose.
If we could just redact that. I only have 45 minutes of comments, and so I hope you don't mind. I just would...
We don't mind at all, as long as they're all in writing.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for this opportunity. I think it's really important that we take a look at our public health system, and I just would really underscore the fact that public health is local, and public health isn't just the public health piece. It also has a component into our land use planning, into transportation. It really is the way for us to engage our communities around education and awareness in order to reach the triple aim that we are trying to reach with the coordinated care organizations and with healthcare reform. If we really want to move from just talking about medical care and we want to get to actual healthy people, the only way to get there is through true cultural change in our communities, and public health definitely is at the forefront of that. I've submitted written testimony, but I wanted to underscore a few proposed amendments, and that would be that we reorder the deliverables in Section 110 and focus first on our state public health vision. Where do we want to go, and what is the role of public health in some of the initiatives that we are trying to address? If we first focus on articulating the future of our public health, and then second, the regionalization and consolidation, it could unveil some opportunities in front of us that we would not know otherwise. The second is that we create a more realistic timetable, of which my colleague mentioned. Right now, we are not just neck deep. We are completely buried in coordinated care organization work. We are trying to stand up our early learning council hubs. We are trying to work on youth development, public safety. As stated, we are also working on our public health accreditation across the state. Public health is local. We are also trying to engage our communities around their own health. And so how we do our day-to-day work, as well as all those other initiatives, allow us for possibly a no later than July 2014 for the vision, but then also give us a deadline for the 2015 session to look at, or a deadline for organizing a model that may work. This could balance some of those critical agendas that are in front of us and competing initiatives. And then last would be to please increase the local public health representation on the task force that's being proposed. I think it's important that we make sure that those doing the work are part of the discussion on how we would move forward. I wanted to just also highlight some of the things that are going on. When I first heard about the 8 regional public health offices, I was a little concerned about prearranged marriages. I don't know that we do that a lot anymore, and having gone through the coordinated care organization experience, I would just say that some of those natural partners we may not know until we really look at what we're trying to accomplish. For us, in the cross-jurisdictional work that we've done in the Jefferson, Crook, and Deschutes area, we are doing a regional... Yes, we are doing a regional 190 and already doing that work, and I know that some of the Eastern Oregon communities are already doing that work. So if we look at what's currently happening and we factor that in with what the vision is, I would just really expect that we would have great outcomes rather than predetermining. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes. To the commissioner who doesn't love me the most.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wanted to have a question here. In the section you talked about regionalization, and I've been contacted by my county saying that they thought this bill should be more focused on best model than rather than a regional model. Mm-hmm. Does this address that issue or does this make it worse?
Chair Greenlick, Representative, I would mention that you may not have, if you look at just a region, is that an ODOT region? Is that a DHS region? Is that a, what region are we talking about? Mm-hmm. I think we need to look at our service delivery. And if we're trying to get to access and we're trying to get to outcomes, we need the community to determine what that region would look like. And I think that's going to probably marry up with what you're looking at for your coordinated care organizations in some fashions. But it may not. And if that's the case for the best outcome, I think we would need to lend ourselves to that versus predetermining what it looks like. And that gets to the comment about prearranged marriages.
Is there anything, my impression is the bill, one of the things to study is what does a public health region look like, mm-hmm. which clearly would be different, I think, than others. Let's do this. Let's, perhaps you can get in touch with my staff. Is Morgan?
Morgan's right here.
Long? Oh. Go for it. Let's get yours first then.
Sure, and I will be really brief. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the executive director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. So I represent the 34 local health departments. We have 33 county-based in one region representing three counties. Three really quick points. One, we appreciate representing...
A region? Is that a public health region?
District. Yeah, so Wasco, Sherman, and Gillam County have a public health district. We appreciate Representative Greenlick's dedication to public health services and a robust local public health system in Oregon and the intent of this bill. I think both the commissioners mentioned how hard local health departments are currently working to form new partnerships with coordinated care organizations to embrace national efforts on accreditation. We have 10 local health departments that have submitted their letters of intent to be an accredited health department and meet those new standards. And so certainly we haven't just been sitting around kind of working on the status quo. We've been working to embrace a change. And we are looking forward to working with this task force as it charts a course for the future of public health services in Oregon. The last thing I would say is that we would also agree with the commissioners that we think that the order of work for the task force should be first kind of to set a vision of public health services in Oregon, and then second to figure out the strategies to get there that may include regionalization and or consolidation. So thank you for your time this afternoon.
I have to say, part of the regionalization language here is so it fits into the relating to clause, but
well, honesty is a good policy. So thank you.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Just a brief comment from the three of you. Can you comment on how this or how county mental health interrelates with public health, and might we want to or not want to include mental health in a regional approach like this?
May I?
Or is it already included with public health?
May I say, we have a separate bill coming that talks about the counties needing to do a study on three different obligations, and we're going to attempt to put that study into the same thing, which is mental health, public health, and something else health, so they don't have to go off and do three separate
studies. I withdraw my question.
That will
has it covered.
Well, I think we're going to have to get it together so that we don't drive them crazy, and it's a bill we have on our agenda.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we have regionalized in Deschutes County. We have Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson, and we utilized Senate Bill 190 to allow us to do that, and so we've created an organization, and our behavioral health dollars are already regionalized.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I may.
We have to close this because we've got a ton of people on the next.
Just one thing if we can toss out there. We just passed a preemption bill, tax bill for tobacco tax. Mm-hmm. How's this going to affect those dollars and what's going to happen with them if we regionalize this? Because the counties, what are they going to do with the money at that point if they implement these taxes?
Well, each county is going to have to decide whether or not they are willing to, in some instances, take the risk of imposing taxes.
Wait a minute.
They may not make it through the Senate.
I'm going to close. Yes.
Before we close, you had indicated maybe some interest in looking at that mission within the context also of the relating clause, if I understood.
Yeah,
I just like to encourage that.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to close this. We'll ask it to be rescheduled, a work session to be rescheduled for next Friday, a week from today. Linda, perhaps you could work with my staff to talk about ways we may think of that, and if you folks have some ideas on that.
Very much.
Let's see if we can get another amendment to it by next Friday that works some of these things out. And we have rescinded the Ways and Means on this because OHA says they think they have money in an existing contract to do what we need to do. So I will close this work session.
Thank you.
I'll ask our administrator put it on the agenda for a week from today with the other 14 items on that week from today and open up a work session. The first public hearing on House Bill 3403, and we'll use the rest of the time. I'll ask all of you to be brief, but we'll use the rest of the time until 2:45 to take as much testimony. And Representative Kenny Geyer will kick it off, and I will alternate panels of 3-4 and 3 against until we run out of what's going on. And I will try and pay special attention to folks that have come more than 100 miles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. I try in my attempt to be brief last time, I forgot to introduce myself, so I'll at least do that. I'm Representative Alyssa Kenny-Geyer from House District 46, which is parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I'm here to introduce House Bill 3403, Healthy Vending in Government Buildings. This act sets limits on calories, fat, sugar, and salt for all snacks and beverages sold in vending machines in Oregon's government buildings. For instance, candy would be replaced with granola bars and trail mix. Large cookies would be replaced with small cookies. Fried potato chips replaced with baked potato chips and pretzels. And sugary beverages would be replaced with water and sparkling juice drinks. As you know, today, weight-related diseases such as heart disease, cancer, stroke, and diabetes cost Oregon taxpayers billions of dollars each year in health costs. Employers, including the state of Oregon and our cities and counties, spend nearly $226 billion per year on productivity losses due to employee and family health problems. That's $1,685 per employee per year. A lot of employers are trying to come up with innovative ways to deal with this. For instance, PEBS Health Engagement Models offers public employees savings on their health insurance when they engage in healthy behaviors. Oregon's public employees are not now automatically enrolled in the Health Engagement Model through their benefits program. Many public and private sectors are taking steps to reverse this alarming trend. However, to address this issue, we need to look at every source. Too often, vending machines only offer choices that are high in sugar, fat, salt, and have little nutritional value. Unhealthy snacks contribute to the obesity epidemic. Busy public employees and visitors turn to vending machines in Oregon's government buildings for a convenient snack or beverage. Oregon workers and families shouldn't have to go out of their way to find a healthy choice. The Healthy Vending in Government Buildings Act places healthier options in on-site vending machines, making the healthy choice an easier choice for workers and visitors. In 2007, Oregon passed House Bill 2650, Healthy Schools for Healthy Students, which instituted nutritional standards in all Oregon K-12 school vending machines. Those students now encounter vending machines at public recreation centers and community health clinics. Offering healthier options in on-site vending machines and government buildings ensures that Oregonians have access to the same snack and beverage options as they move from schools to the workforce. I want to recognize the Blind Enterprise Program, who is here today, and the Blind Commission. I had an opportunity to meet with them for the first time yesterday to discuss their concerns about this bill. And I would love to find a way to work with them to make sure that our state continues in the vein that we've been really leading the health charge and being seen as a pioneer for health transformation in this state. And so I've just started getting to know them. I'm looking forward to working with them to make sure that we make this a really exemplary example of how these vending programs can work hand in hand with what the state is trying to do. And I also want to recognize the Oregon Public Health Institute, who has taken a lead on this bill, Upstream Public Health, and many other organizations that have endorsed this. So I'm going to be brief and leave time for the many people here to testify. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's start with Nancy Becker.
Archana Fed Campbell.
Hey, that lost me. I could read it. I just didn't know what it was. And Cassandra Griffin. Archana.
Greetings, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Becker. I live in Portland, and I work at the Oregon Public Health Institute. I'm speaking in support of healthy vending for government buildings, HB 3403. In light of your time constraints, we plan to make this brief. As a result of Speaker Kotek's schedule and a family emergency of Sean Colmer, our lineup got even more brief. They were both planning to be here to testify in support of the bill. There is written testimony from the Public Health Division, SEIU members, ONA, PSU faculty, and the Heart Association to support this bill. We also have a note from a colleague in Austin, Texas, who has successfully implemented a change in the city's vending machines to 100% healthier foods and beverages. As a dietitian, I know how hard it is for all of us to use self-control when high-calorie, sugary drinks and snacks are right there in front of us. We all get hungry in the middle of the day and want a little snack. Vending machines in public buildings provide us with a chance to act upon our urges. Vending machines are packed with foods that contribute to the obesity epidemic, which costs Oregon taxpayers over $6 billion in health care costs. It doesn't have to be this way. Vending machines could be stocked with appealing, healthier products. We could have a state where everyone is healthy and well, and health care costs of government workers have stopped their perpetual increases. Government-subsidized vending machines in government buildings could be part of the solution, making it easier for public employees to lead healthier lifestyles. Public employees in PEB are in the health engagement model, and they're trying to make the kind of dietary changes that healthier vending would enable. Visitors to public buildings don't have to be assaulted with banks of vending machines that tempt them. Both visitors and employees could look at vending machines and see a reflection of the values that govern our state: health, vibrancy, conservation of our resources, and support for our public staff. Workers want healthier products. A recent SEIU survey of 25,000 union members, 76% of responders stated that they were in favor of rules for vending machines. All over the state, public employees have asked for healthier products, only to be stonewalled, confused, and misled about the availability of healthier items. What about the products? Well, the snack industry has responded to increased demand for healthy vending items with the introduction of hundreds, if not thousands, of new products, both food and beverages that would meet the proposed standards. And I have some examples right here. I can pass these around if you want to see them. These products...
You might not make it back.
Might not get them back, okay. We can... they're heavy. This is heavy. Even though I drank one of
Come
them
on
the way over
let's
here.
Go. Mm-hmm.
Say what?
Finish.
Okay. Keep talking. The snack food industry knows that this growth area of their that this is a growth area of their merchandise, and has responded with marvelous products that are healthy and appealing. Some are even made in Oregon. These products sell and sell well. We know that schools have implemented nutrition standards and their vending operations are doing fine. Several venues around the country have stocked their machines completely with healthier items and they're also doing fine. We really want to make this work. From a public health perspective, nutrition standards for all the products make sense and is feasible. I understand there are some technical issues with the bill, and I want to assure you that we're open to discussions and will work hard to make this work so that we can move forward in a meaningful way. Nutrition standards for all foods and vending machines is a win-win proposition. Workers and clients get better food to choose from. Vendors get guidance and technical expertise to determine what products are suitable. Their business thrives. The state of Oregon once again leads the nation in prevention and lowering health care costs. Thank you.
Okay. Now, you each will have 2 minutes, not 5 minutes like we had to start.
I thought it was 2 minutes.
Chair Grinlick, members of the committee, my name is Archana Thapa-Campbell, and I'm the operations manager for the Department of Justice. I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to briefly share DOJ's experience on healthy snacks in state buildings. To promote a healthy and happy workplace, our Attorney General encourages DOJ employees to live a healthy lifestyle. So almost 4 years ago, the Department of Justice established a wellness committee whose goal was to encourage employees to practice healthy habits such as eating healthy and getting regular exercise. So one of the ways in which the wellness committee believed DOJ employees could find healthier options was that to go to the vending machines in our buildings where they were stocked or hopefully they would be stocked with healthy food and beverages. So in November 2009, DOJ contacted the Blind Commission, who administers the vending machines in state buildings, to ask for healthy products. Initially, the response that the vending machine contractor, Northwest Vending Company, known as NVC, said that they do not provide healthier snacks as they would not be sufficiently profitable to provide them. So DOJ kept insisting, and NVC did provide a brochure of their healthier snacks, but we did not find their offerings met our needs. Finally, about 7 months later, we began getting the healthier choices we asked for initially. It was not without compromise, though. Only a third of the snacks stocked in our pilot program vending machines were healthier snacks. We would like more healthier snacks, but continue to get pushback from the vendor. The initial bags were also larger and higher in price. It took an additional 3 to 4 months to reduce the size of the bags and the prices to a point where employees would purchase them. House Bill 3403 will help public employees meet their own health goals by eating healthy. Current vending machines do not support public employees in their efforts to make healthier choices. Set of uniform healthy snack standards will make it much easier for us and our employees to succeed in our multiple facilities. It is a challenge to make these changes on a building-to-building basis. Finally, the Attorney General is committed in helping DOJ employees live healthy lives and providing healthier snack options in our vending machines. Unhealthy vending machine
Please
snacks,
wrap it up.
Yes, and sugary beverages are direct obstacles for public employees working hard to lose weight. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Cassandra Griffin. I'm from Upstream Public Health. We are a statewide health policy organization. I'll reiterate that the three of us are the sum total of the pro side here today. The rest is written testimony. I am here today to share our enthusiastic support for healthy vending standards in government buildings for the sake of better health for hundreds of thousands of city, state, and county government employees and for all of the members of the public who visit those buildings. If I am hungry at my desk or at a recreation center, I walk down the hall to the temptation of the vending machines, and then I am almost certain to buy what is there. If the choices are unhealthy, then I sabotage my own fitness goals because hunger makes our resolve weaker. If the choices are all healthy, however, I will pick a sparkling juice drink and a granola bar instead of a large cookie and soda. I am better off, and the vendor is no worse off. Results from cities, counties, and agencies in other states support this. For example, the city of Baldwin Park, California, implemented 100% healthy vending in 2008. They experienced a temporary decrease in sales for the first 6 months while people got used to the new products, but then sales returned to the previous sales averages. In the written materials we have submitted, you have a long list of other cities and counties that have already done this. Similarly, when the healthy vending standards have been implemented in school districts around the country, the CDC and USDA have found that the majority of schools had an increase in revenue, or that revenue stayed the same. Only 5% of school districts reported a dip in sales when all healthy vending standards were implemented. Those are from the kids who don't have our so-called self-restraint and good decision-making skills. I'm excited to see this bill moving forward, and I look forward to working with the members of the committee and other interested parties on some improvements to the first draft that we see before us so that everyone can move forward with something. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to call Randy Hoth, John Powell, and Vance Huddle. And then following them, I'll call Art Stevenson, Luanda Miranda, and Oscar Miranda. And you guys have about 12 minutes to go, so the faster you are, the more people will be able to talk.
Want me to lead off? Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, Vice Chair Thompson, and members of the committee. I'm Vance Huddle. I'm a Region Vice President for Canteen Vending Service, which is a national vending company, part of the Compass Group. And we're extremely supportive of taking vending to a healthier place in the public buildings. And we're anxious to work with the committee that started this process. And our company has led the industry in developing healthier programs like Balanced Choices and Choice Plus. So we started back in 2001, which was kind of several years ahead of the industry, but the industry's also developed a program. We partner and have developed programs with the Seattle Parks, King County, Clark County. Also, we're working with Clackamas County right now in the city of Beaverton. We are very concerned about the financial impact to the licensed blind vendor community. For that reason, we're not in support of the way Bill 3403, the way it's currently written. We actually did a conversion of a major hospital chain and in Oregon, and when we did that, we experienced a 35% to 40% decline in revenues, which we believe would happen in the public buildings also. That has a severe impact on the revenues that are being produced for the licensed blind vendors. Somewhere, just for the accounts that I service, somewhere in the neighborhood of $150,000 a year that are lost in the program. I don't serve. There's actually several other vendors who service, business for the licensed blind vendors. So we expect a significant decrease in sales, and we've also done quite a bit of programs in the public schools, especially in the state of Washington, and we haven't had the experience. The revenues have not declined. Instead, we've experienced somewhere in the neighborhood of a 60% to 80% decline in those situations. So. With that, for these reasons, we really would like to participate in helping Oregon lead the vending to a healthier place. But we we don't want to create winners and losers in this situation. And in this situation, the licensed blind vendors that I support and partner with would be the losers. And for that reason, that we oppose House Bill 3403 the way it's currently written.
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Randy Hout. I am a lifelong blind Oregon resident. I am a licensed blind vendor of 28 years, the elected chairperson of the Committee of Blind Vendors, and I'm also the chair of Blind Employment Services of Tomorrow, where Blind Employment Services of Tomorrow is an advocacy coalition for blind employment through the state of Oregon. The reason I am here is to share the position of those organizations that I am involved with to not support, encourage a non-support on House Bill 3403. There is 70% unemployment across the nation for people who are blind. Statistics show it's a little bit higher here in Oregon as well, so every job a blind person can have is near and dear to that heart. As mentioned earlier, there are a lot of technical issues with the House bill. I've reviewed it. As you know, we have provided heartfelt testimony to you previously in writing and also some documentation. And please note the CDC 2012 report did a review of healthy vending across the land. What I would say is some of those items that you saw this morning will not absolutely fit in vending machines. Also, what I will share is, in reading these reports, I've seen a collaboration with the stakeholders. I've seen the Oregon Health Department, or different state health departments. I've seen the licensed blind vendors. I've seen the vending community. I've seen the Commission for the Blind, who worked together. This kind of came out of the woodwork, and we just can't support it. Like Van said, we really want to be partners. We believe in healthy vending. We want to be pushing the way, but it needs to be practical and make sense. We just see this as being a catastrophe for not only the licensed blind vendors in Oregon, but also many businesses here in Oregon that provide those same services. So thank you very much for your time.
Chairman Greenlick, I'm Dan, and members of the committee, I'm Dan Lind. My brother and I operate a vending operation in Corvallis. I just wanted to say that we are offering these products in our vending machines now, even though it's not the whole vending machine. Secondly, I'm concerned that you're just targeting the vending industry right here in the Capitol. If you put all these products in the machine, you've still got your coffee shop that you can go and buy these same products. The unhealthier products and probably more people will go to the coffee shop instead of getting something from a vending machine. I heard that the volume of revenue has gone up in the schools with the healthy vending, that's not the case in Corvallis. Our profits and revenues did go down. And that's about all I have to say.
Thank you very much. John Powell, testify?
Yeah, I took his place. Okay. Just for this committee here, but he is here.
Okay. Well, let's go with Art Stevenson, Wanda Miranda, and John Powell. And we're going to have to gavel in 10 minutes, too, because there's another committee coming in right behind us. They need to get organized, so...
Representative Greenlick, Representative Thomas, Vice Chair Thompson, and Vice Chair Kenninger, members of the committee. My name is Art Stevenson. I'm a blind license manager in the Randolph Shepherd Vending Program here in Oregon for 27 years. And I am also a board member of the National Association of Blind Merchants, who is the leading advocacy organization for the vending program in the country. What I would like to say today is 2.5 years ago, this same situation came up with Governor Ted Kulongowski. He was planning on doing an executive order concerning this issue, and once he gathered all the facts, he decided not to issue that executive order because he found out that the blind license managers do work with the buildings. We supply the products that the people in our buildings ask for and use. I can tell you right now that in my vending machines, I try to put as many healthy snacks that are available out there to be bought from our vendors, and those products are the products that I throw away. They go past date, and the people continue to buy the other snacks. I can tell you, state workers have access to my machines approximately 1 hour a day. That's 1 hour a day. And then the rest of the time, they have their normal eating habits. It's not my vending machines that are creating the obesity problems, the diabetes. It's all the other eating habits that they have during the rest of the day.
Can I ask you to wrap it up, please?
Yes, sir. So anyways, I urge you not to support this bill. You'll just be putting blind people out of work. If the demand is there, we will provide the products that the consumers in the building want and will buy.
Thank you.
Chairman Greenlick and committee members, my name is LaWanda Miranda. I am a blind license manager through the Business Enterprise Program and have been for 18 years. I am proud to be a successful businesswoman. 2 years ago, when this raised its head, I did go 40% healthy in my vending machines. I service Central and Eastern Oregon. And I can tell you that the 40% healthy product that I put in my machines is the product that doesn't move, and the shelf life isn't as good as the other, and I have to throw a lot of it out. I know that people think healthy and talk healthy, but they don't actually eat healthy. I also believe that we're being held to a different standard, not being allowed to compete with our other merchants, because people, like the others have said, can go to the other McDonald's or 7-Elevens down the street. So this would be very devastating to my business alone and to my fellow PE managers, and I ask that you do not support House Bill 3403, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell. I represent the Northwest Automatic Vending Association, NAVA for short. We will work with Representative Kenny Geyer, who we have the utmost respect for, as this bill gets additional consideration. Our concern in these public buildings is, as Dan Lynn from Cravalla said, you can simply step a few feet down the hallway, and if the restaurant portion of the buildings wants to sell my favorite Snickers, they can just have them there by the cash register or sell the same product. So if they go out of the vending machine at 250 calories down the hallway in a public building, little is gained. And secondly, I think the hearings should take place at the exit at Costco. If you see what people buy en masse, and if you're going to gorge on unhealthy products, you're not going to put dollar bills in a vending machine because they're more expensive. You'll get the 12-pack.
Take it, you don't represent Costco.
Mr. Chairman, I do own 10 shares of their stock.
Conflict of interest.
But thank you for your time, and we appreciate it very much.
Well, Representative Kitty Geyer is committed to trying to get some modification to this that will both improve the access to healthy foods and not destroy an industry. So I will close.
Mr. Chair, may I suggest
this public hearing?
They put the Oregon Marionberry chocolate bar in their machines because this thing is phenomenal. And it comes out of the store here and supports Oregon.
A bit change of strategy. We're going to
We're going to hold, and we're going to reschedule this bill for the 15th of April, which puts the time pressure on it because the last time we can pass it is on the 17th, so not much room. And instead of rescheduling House Bill 2432, we're going to carry House Bill 2432 over to Monday. I'm sorry we didn't get to hear everybody, but I think you made your point pretty clearly, and you didn't need to have some more witnesses. Particularly, I'm happy at least we heard one of the couple from 100 miles away.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.